Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 11 of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode of Game On,
I'm up in the moon.
We'll give you a supersized review of Android, the new epic board game from Fantasy Flight Games.
Will you kill to play this game, or would you rather be dead?
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it's Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about board games, card games, role-playing games, all kinds of other tabletop.
That'll be the day.
See, Cody and I had this argument before we turned the microphones on about whether our podcast included role-playing games or not. And I've been saying during the intro, the occasional role-playing game, but we really want to start doing a little bit more in the realm of role-playing games, so I was trying to change it up, and what do I get? I get laughter.
A snort of disdain.
But anyway, how are you, Cody?
There are many things to disdain lately, including the Colts' perennial early exit from the playoffs this year.
At the hands of the Chargers.
At the hands of the San Diego Chargers. Some rough officiating in that one. I won't blame it all on the refs, but...
Freeney definitely did.
Oh, yeah. It's, phantom holding calls on third and two in overtime, you know.
And then we had the departure and retirement of Tony Dungy, great coach of the Colts.
Definitely. Great coach, great man.
Definitely. And then in college sports, that's probably my last report from the Texas football scene. The Texas Longhorns victors in the Fiesta Bowl over the Ohio State University
Buckeyes.
Oh, that's who it is. Yeah, is that like a nut?
Right. I'm an Indiana Hoosier, my friend. So
I have no idea what that is.
So
you're used to teams with mascots that don't really mean anything.
So what do you get for winning the Fiesta Bowl? That's what I thought.
Yeah,
congratulations on your fifth place finish in the AP poll.
Okay, well, then now that all that's over with, we're going to be moving into baseball season pretty soon.
Oh, boy.
I was a huge baseball fan for many, many years. I was a big New York Mets fan back when I lived in Virginia, which is that's where their AAA Farm Club is.
Okay.
Or was.
You saved that one.
And so I want to get back into baseball, and so I'm going to try to pick out a team here pretty soon. I may go back to the Mets and just try to be a Mets fan for a year and see how that goes. But
go with the Reds.
Well, we'll see how it goes. When Cody and I start our sports podcast and stop annoying all the gamers with our sports talk.
Stop tagging me at the sports.
All right, well, what do we have up today in this episode of Game On?
Well, we have, of course, the Game On inbox, the old standby.
Oh, yeah.
And we're doing something a little different. Instead of a separate big deal in Buy, Try, or Deny, with a game as big as Android that's caused just so much
buzz.
Yeah. Not good, not bad, but just a lot of buzz in the gaming world. We wanted to give this game the attention that it deserves. So in addition to a standard Buy, Try, or Deny, you're going to get some new features we've added. Tell them about them, John.
That's right. Well, one recent acquisition in the Game On arsenal of equipment is a nice little portable
phaser.
Looks like a phaser. It's a portable recording device, which will make things a little bit more portable. Sound quality isn't at the level of what our normal equipment is, but it's definitely where we can take it around to conventions and things like that. And so we're really excited about that. And so we're going to be bringing you our first on-location...
Halftime show,
yeah. Where we... gonna give you some of our impressions of the game as we're playing it. So yeah, we'll be looking forward to that coming up in the show.
Definitely. But as always, we will kick everything off with the Game On inbox starting right
now. It's time for the Game On inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double click on our inbox and see what we find. Welcome to the Game on Inbox. As always, we're going to start with some games we've been playing. And as for me, the games I've been playing lately, not too many.
Kind of a dry spell.
Been a bit of a dry spell. I don't know. It's probably because I have had to go back to work after the holidays, and so just haven't had an opportunity to play much in the way of games. But I have had a chance to play some games with some folks at work. As I've mentioned before, I've got a little fledgling game group going on at work. Mostly people who are playing Magic the Gathering, so we have probably a group of at least four or five that play that pretty regularly. But I had an interesting experience the other day where we were sitting around playing some party games. I actually was able to rope in a couple of other folks, and we had a bigger group, and we played Say Anything, and we also played a game called On the Dot. And as I looked over to another table in the cafeteria, just literally 15, 20 feet from me, there was sitting on the table amongst a group of guys a copy of Battlestar Galactica, the board game.
No.
Yeah.
Did you go over and applaud?
No.
Just stand by him and just...
Single L actually pointed it out to me, and he said, well, what is that? Oh, he knew what it was. But and then to my surprise, they actually pulled it out and started playing it, which...
Over lunch?
Over lunch. It's not a lunchtime game at all. But I went over and said hi to him, it looks like a pretty interesting group of guys. So pretty... big gamer community at my job. It's kind of refreshing to see. So
I should have picked science as my field.
You should have. Yeah. Other than that, Cody and I just recently, like an hour or two ago,
right.
got together to play the game Ubongo.
Ubongo.
When I was over at Stephen Conway's house a few weeks ago, he introduced me to quite a few puzzle-based games with like simultaneous puzzle solving. And so I had to rush right out and buy Ubongo, which is a great one where you have to basically solve these sort of like Tetris-like puzzles. And you're doing it at the same time as your opponent. And whoever finishes first will get the first pick of this pool of gems and these little plastic jewels. And whoever has the most gems of a particular color at the end of 9 rounds is the winner. So it's a lot of fun, I think. It's real fast. You kind of have to have a bit of a puzzly mindset, I guess, for it to be any fun. Otherwise, it could be just kind of frustrating. But we had, I think, a pretty good time with that. Did you like that game?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, not a whole lot, really. Other than what we played Android, which we'll get to in a few minutes here. So.
That takes the place of all the other games.
It took up quite a bit of time. So, Cody, what about you? What have you been playing?
Basically, a lot of what you mentioned, of course, you know, my weekly D&D game, an RPG here and there. Getting ready for the Dungeons & Dragons Experience Convention here at the end of January over in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
What does that involve? Is that like a national thing or?
It's sponsored by Wizards of the Coast. It's kind of like the D&D convention.
Okay.
So I'm just going to be going there for like 3 or 4 days and just playing D&D until I puke, pretty much. So.
You've done that several times.
I know.
You sound like an alcoholic of sorts.
Binge and purge. You know?
Because every time you get back from one of those things, you're like, I'm not going to play D&D for a year.
That's how it is after even Gen Con. You know, those few days afterwards, you're like, I don't want to play any more games.
Yeah, that's true.
At least I am.
I don't feel that way after Gen Con usually. I just want to sleep, but I wouldn't want to play more games.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can see how playing.
Thanks
that
for making me look bad.
Cody's not a real gamer.
That's right.
Paper tiger.
No, I could see. I could see after playing D&D for that many, you know, hours for that many days, I'd be a little bit.
Well,
tired.
I'm playing 10 slots, air quotes there, and a slot being one module, which is 4 hours long.
So that's 40 hours.
That's 40 hours of D&D.
Oh, I can't blame you. I'd be kind of sick of it after that. Any game, yeah.
Eh.
All right, well, we've got just a couple of news stories in the Game On Inbox, mostly having to do with conventions. The first story is regarding the Game Manufacturers Association, or GAMA, which is the association that puts on the Origins Convention in Columbus, Ohio every year.
You think that'll catch on?
It seems to be doing okay. And we had a really good time when we went last year, and I think we'll probably be making it this year. And so GAMA named a new executive director of their organization. And so they released this press release that said that they've hired a man named John Ward, who they say is the strong, insightful, and experienced leader that both GAMA and our industry needs. They list his background, and I don't know this man at all, and I mean, he could do a very excellent job. He's replacing Anthony Galella, who has worked with GAMA for about the last 7 years. And Anthony Galella is like the quintessential gamer. He's got like some gamer resume unlike just about anybody that I've seen. This guy, John Ward, says he brings a variety of strengths and experience to his new role, but he has like a master's degree in public administration with emphasis on fiscal and policy management, and that he has extensive experience in the military and in state government. He's a retired Army officer with 23 years of combined experience in the military, police, and engineer corps.
Move your piece! Roll the die!
You will gain now! So I can obviously see how he's a perfect fit for Gamma. They don't really mention any sort of a gamer resume for him, so I don't really know if he's a gamer or not. But anyway, we'll see how that goes. Origins has been a real good convention in the past, and a little bit of a different feel from Gen Con, which is kind of the big show that we go to every year. But it's still a lot of fun, and we'll definitely be back there in 2009. So if any of you are going to Origins, we'll have to talk about that a little bit later in a future episode and see if we might be able to get together and play some games, have some food or something like that. Also in some industry news regarding Gen Con, Gen Con released a press release in the past couple of weeks here indicating that they are going to be coming out of Chapter 11 bankruptcy and that their reorganization plan has been approved by the Washington courts that were taking care of their bankruptcy hearings and everything. So it looks like everything's a go for them to be on the road to financial recovery, which is really good news for us because we love to go to Gen Con. It's one of our favorite times of the year, especially being local to Indianapolis. So if you are interested in going to Gen Con, it looks like everything's going to be a go for this year's show. And I think that event submission starts on the 21st of January. I think badge registration is usually around the very first week of February. But you can go to www.gencon.com. They can give you all that information. But if you've never been to Gen Con and you're a gamer, if you have the means or the ability, highly recommend it. It's a great time.
Make the pilgrimage.
Tons of stuff going on. And much like if you're in Europe and you're a big board gamer, Essen's the place to go. If you're a gamer in the United States, you really need to make it a priority to come to Gen Con at least once. So we've also got some information about a local convention, which we've mentioned in a previous episode, put on by the Hoosier Gamers. And Cody, why don't you tell us a little bit about HoosierCon?
All right. HoosierCon is a free convention that will be here in Indianapolis, March 13th through the 15th. And I'll mention that again because it's a rarity. It is a free convention.
Completely free.
Completely free. If you want to pay for the hotel room, fine. But if you're just coming to game, completely free.
That's right.
Now, if you want to stay and play in the hotel, they have a special code you can use. And what you're going to do is you want to use code WYC. That's short for Hoosier Con, as in WHOYER Con.
We'll put it into the show notes. It's weird. Unique spelling. So,
yeah, who is your con? And of course, this will be at the Hilton Indianapolis North, and we will have a link to that in the show notes as well. You can use that WYC code up until February 11th, either online or through calling the hotel, and that will lock you in for an $89 a night room rate, which for a con hotel, and I've seen this hotel, it's pretty nice. It's
a good deal.
It's a very good deal.
Yep. Especially since the gaming is free.
Right.
You're not having to pay any sort of an admission fee to get in.
No, and even after that, the rates are reasonable, so come on out and play. Now, there's going to be a full buffet of games available. You're going to have board games, card games, more than the occasional role-playing game.
Oh, yeah. Just to give you an idea of some of the things that are going on, they've got games of Arkham Horror. Looks like someone's running a Serenity role-playing
I'm
game
playing
event.
That one.
Really? Called Big Damn Heroes.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Grave Robbers from Outer Space. Something that's near and dear to mine and Cody's heart, an Ink and Gold tournament.
Oh, yeah. And we're not putting it on.
No,
that's
not even
surprised me.
Yeah, so that's, but we'll definitely be playing.
Exactly.
So things like that. We've got a whole lot of RPGA stuff going on, uh-huh. Living Forgotten Realms. Yep. There'll be events going on for that. And one especially interesting event that Cody will be running.
Oh, yes.
Using the Savage Worlds rules, role-playing game rules. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the X-Presidents?
Well, the X-Presidents is a con game that I'd like to do a new scenario each year. Featuring them, the X-Presidents, it's kind of loosely based on an old Saturday Night Live cartoon skit from the mid-90s. Basically, imagine the most iconic U.S. presidents, Washington, Lincoln, Reagan, even like Clinton, things like that. They are an elite time-traveling force that are brought together to solve various crimes and rescue, and just do tales of daring do. Each of them have kind of a special power, like Teddy Roosevelt can shift into a dire bear, or Washington can lead his troops in a certain way in battle, things like that. And, of course, Teddy Roosevelt's weapon, the big stick.
The big stick. You know, being a presidential trivia buff that I am, which I know I'm in the great minority, but I'm really looking forward to playing in this game. And so anybody who's coming out to HoosierCon, if you've ever seen that cartoon, or if you're just, you know, want to play a fun game, Cody is an outstanding GM, and so I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's going to be a very tongue-in-cheek. You don't have to be a history nerd to play this like John.
it does help, though.
It does help. It's just going to be rules taught. Savage Worlds is very just kind of a fast, seat-of-the-pants kind of a system. So
piece of cake.
It's just going to be 4 hours. I guarantee it'll be fun, so definitely check it out if you're coming to HoosierCon.
And also, at HoosierCon this year, we're going to be recording an episode of Game On with Cody and John live from the gaming room. Well, I say live. It's almost live. We'll be recording it and then, you know, editing it heavily. But you'll see. And, you know, so if you're not able to make it to HoosierCon, you should be able to tune in to a future episode of Game On with Cody and John and hear about all of the details of the convention. We'll have interviews and all kinds of stuff. For us, being relatively new podcasters, we almost look at this as sort of a warm-up for Origins and for Gen Con. We really want to be able to bring you some great content from those conventions, interviews, and just we really love the idea of just interviewing common gamers. You know, it's great to interview a designer, and we really want to be able to do that as well, but it's great just to go around and just talk to everyday folks that are playing games, because that's what we are. We're just everyday folks who are playing games. So look for us at HoosierCon in March. And as Ken Goad said when he was on our show, anytime that you can start gaming on Friday the 13th and finish on the Ides of March, it's a pretty good thing.
Exactly. And even if you're bringing your significant other who may not be that interested in games, they've planned full events for maybe the gamer widow, as it were.
Yeah, and this isn't confirmed yet, but I think that my wife, Rachel, is actually going to be running a Stampin' Up! Craft demonstration class sort of a thing. So if a spouse or girlfriend, boyfriend, or whatever is interested in crafts of that nature, then there'll be stuff for you too. So feel free to bring your non-gamer friends and family. It's gonna be a great time.
And kids too. They've got quite a lot of kids events planned. So.
Yep, that's a very important thing to the Hoosier Gamers, is to get the whole family involved in gaming. So I think you're gonna find that there's stuff for your kids to do too. Overall, it's gonna be a great time, and the best part about it,
completely free. And you'll be amazed that it's free based on their past offerings. It's just been a blessing, you might say. spend your money and go buy more games.
That's right.
So check out the show notes. We'll have all the information, including a link to where you can see the submitted events and eventually sign up for events. I think registration is going to start end of January. So if you want to lose to us in Ink and Gold or play in my ex-president's game, why, that would be two events I would heartily encourage you to sign up for.
And hey, one final thing. If you are a GM and you are interested in running a game, they're still looking for GMs.
Absolutely.
For games.
Get them in there quick.
Yep, I think that they're running the GM registration through the end of January. Right. So if you are interested in running a game, a role-playing game, a card game, board game, whatever kind of game you want to run, just feel free to go onto the website there and sign up.
Very good. Well, I think that's about it for the Game On Inbox. Let's tackle this beast. Let's get into Android.
Well, I got to take a deep breath here. You know, it's going to...
Pack a lunch.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a look at Android.
Let's do it.
Well, today we're going to be talking about Android, the new Gigantor big epic board game from Fantasy Flight Games. They're getting
Fantasy Flight.
No, not on this podcast. It seems like Fantasy Flight is getting more and more of these epic games in their arsenal. So we were real excited when this one came out. One interesting thing about this game, which was released in December of 2008, is that it was released with very little
pomp.
Yeah, very little or circumstance. Very little upfront information. You know, a lot of times a game that's going to be released will get a lot of demo play at a convention. you know, we went to Gen Con back in August when I'm sure that this game was in production. And
had to have been.
I mean, when you hear about the detail level in this game, you'll understand that Kevin Wilson's probably been working on this game for a couple years.
Our close personal friend, Kevin Wilson.
As far as we're concerned.
Maybe
one day we'll get an interview with him. That'd be kind of neat.
Shoot for the stars.
Yeah.
Hey. Even if you'll miss, you'll be close to the stars. You know what they say.
Aim high.
Anyway,
well, this game was not released with that sort of pomp and circumstance. It just sort of came out of nowhere. Fantasy Flight actually did sort of a viral marketing campaign on their website where they had little hidden links.
Oh, and we covered it, too.
We did, yeah. We kind of found out about
it early. We're intrepid.
Yes, we are. And, you know, it was okay, that the little viral marketing thing, I guess. But it was interesting. But the game just sort of came out, and, you know, it's a huge game, and it has been very, very mixed.
Polarizing.
I was going to say mixedly received, but mixedly is not a word. But very,
that's why
very
he's a scientist, folks.
That's right. Not really a podcaster. But the the reviews for this game on BoardGameGeek especially have been either overwhelmingly positive, oh my gosh, this is one of the greatest games ever, or they've been really negative, I never want to play this game again. In particular, Scott Nicholson, a good friend of the podcast and fellow podcaster, he put out a video that talked about this game, and I'm not sure if I've ever seen such a negative reaction to a game by Scott than this one.
And he's pretty spot on.
Yeah, I usually agree with his game reviews, but I'm not sure if I 100% agree with his reaction to this one. But we'll talk about it.
That's what we do.
So the first thing we want to do is to give you an overview of the rules, and of course that's usually my department to do that. So I want to let Cody kick back here, and we'll give you just a detailed overview of how everything works in Android. So Android takes place in a world of the future in the city of New Angeles, and it's got a nice background story that's included in the rule book that sort of tells you the whole story that's going to go behind everything that's going to go on in the game. The basic idea is that it's a futuristic society, and you have these androids that are integrated into human society. There's two kinds. One company called Genteki creates human clones that can be educated and can sort of be brought up to maturity really, really quickly. And then you have this company called Haas Bioroid that can actually take a human intelligence and map it into a robot, and so they call those Bioroids. So these are these two different kinds of androids that are for sale by these two companies. And so two out of the five characters that you can play are actually androids. One is a human clone, and the other one is an actual Bioroid. So that's sort of the background there, and you know, it's sort of this somewhat dystopian Blade Runner like society where you know, things are kind of dark and so forth. So the object of the game, and I think that the rule book sums it up pretty well, is that in this futuristic city of New Angeles, there are five detectives that are undergoing a murder investigation. And so the five investigators are Caprice Nise, who is a psychic clone, Floyd 2X3A7C, a doubting Bioroid, a very Tin Man in the Wizard of Oz kind of a thing, Lewis Blaine, who's a corrupt cop, Rachel Beckman, who's an estranged bounty hunter, and Raymond Flint, a troubled private investigator. So in Android, 3 to 5 players take on the role of one of these detectives and are given 2 weeks to solve the case. They investigate the murder by traveling around the map and following up leads to discover evidence that they can use to convict the suspect who they believe is guilty. In addition, they attempt to uncover the conspiracy behind the murder and also deal with problems that spring up in their personal lives. The detective who best manages all of these tasks and collects the most victory points wins the game. So the basic idea in the game is that you're trying to get the most victory points, which sounds very European, but this is far from being a European game. It's got a very, very heavy sort of American-style theme laid over top of it. So let's start off real quick by going over the components of the game. And you know what? I'm not even going to try to go through all of the stuff that you get in this game because it would just take far too long. But needless to say, you're going to get a board. It's a very nicely designed board with some sort of a very kind of a dark, futuristic artwork to it. Half of the board covers the area of New Angeles on Earth, and the other half covers an area on the moon. And it's not really drawn to scale because otherwise it looks like the moon is about to crash into the earth. But you have those two areas in the board. And then in the middle is this area called the Beanstalk. And the idea in the story is that they've built this sort of tower, I guess, that sort of leads up from the earth to the moon as sort of a connector. So that's also an area in the board. On the right side of the board is a square area, which is an area for uncovering the conspiracy. And we'll talk about that in a second. So in addition to these two large areas, included in those two large areas are all these little locations on the map that your character can travel to. And they do a lot of different things. So you get the nice board. You're going to get some character sheets. There's five total characters in the game. You'll get a sheet for each one of those. You're going to get some really neat cardboard markers, I guess, to indicate your vehicle. Movement in this game works a little bit differently from a lot of other games in that you're said to have this sort of, I guess, flying car that can zoom you around wherever you want. And so you use this. It's almost like a measuring device. It's like a cardboard arc that you place one end of it on one location, and then you see how far in sort of a radius you can go from that location using your vehicle. So you get that little cardboard token there. We'll go over that, the movement stuff, in a second. You're going to get some cards to indicate the murder that you're going to be investigating. There's lots of different of those to choose from. And you're also going to get cards for the suspects that you're going to be investigating during the game. You're going to get a bunch of other different kinds of cards. You get plot cards because we're going to be kind of living out the plot of your character. Each character gets a light deck and a dark deck of what are called twilight cards. We'll talk about those in a second. You get a ton of cardboard counters. You have things called favor tokens, alibi tokens, hit tokens, baggage tokens, trauma counters, Haas tokens, Jinteki tokens, conspiracy tokens. You get the idea. There's just an absolute ton of components in this game. And so I'll just go ahead and leave it at that. And we'll go over the rules of the game and how a game turn works, and you'll see how some of those cardboard tokens come into play. So to set up the game, you're going to start off by setting up the board and kind of organizing all of your counters and everything. And you're going to select a murder that's going to be investigated during the game. In the rule book, they suggest that for the very first play, you choose a murder called Evil at the Estates. And on the card for Evil at the Estates or for any of the other murders, it's going to give you some nice flavor text sort of description of what happened for the murder. It's going to tell you where the crime scene is, and you're going to place a scene of the crime marker, which looks like a little, dead body or chalk outline, is going to go on that square. And then you're also going to see on the right side of your murder card or your crime card is a list of all the suspects that are involved in this particular crime. And you're going to choose a number of suspects based upon how many players you have. You're going to choose one more suspect than you have players. So we played a 3-player game, so we had 4 suspects in our murder case. You're going to pull out the cards for each of those suspects and set them along the side of the board. Those are the ones you're going to be investigating during the game. So every character in the game, every player is going to have all of their stuff that goes along with their character. They have their character card, and then each character is going to get a certain amount of stuff, different kinds of tokens and benefits based upon where which character that they are. And they're also going to get a deck of light twilight cards. These are good cards that you can play during your turn that'll cause good things to happen. And then there's a deck of dark cards, and these are cards that refer to your character, but they can be played by your opponents during your turn to cause bad things to happen to you. So that deck of dark cards is going to go in the middle of the board. As I said, another part in the game that's important is what's called the conspiracy. Now, the mechanic for the conspiracy that you're trying to uncover during the game is really kind of unique. I've never really seen anything like this before, in that on the board is this sort of a square area, and and in the middle of the square is actually a puzzle piece that's glued into the board. There's an eyeball on it, and so that's considered to represent the conspiracy. And so what you're going to be doing during the game is taking puzzle pieces and laying them down next and connecting the puzzle pieces to this conspiracy, and it's going to radiate out from the middle of this board to the outer edges. And when you make a link to a particular place on the outer edge, it's going to sort of change the conditions of the game, because it means that you will have uncovered the conspiracy and linked it to a particular thing, and that'll change kind of how your victory points are allocated at the end of the game. So that's kind of neat. So there's going to be big piles of puzzle pieces, and that's going to go next to the board too during your setup phase. You're also going to place your starting lead tokens. The leads are what you're going to be following up on during the game to find out about evidence against these particular suspects. And so you'll each character has their own leads that they're going to place. Plus, there are tokens for each of the suspects, and they're going to be kind of moving around the board, and those will be testimony leads that you can follow up on. So you have a big pool of evidence tokens, too. We threw them all into a cup because they get drawn during the game. Okay, so then after all that's been set up, you're also going to deal out these things called hunch cards. Now, the way that guilt kind of works in this game is a little bit different. If you're playing a game like Clue, where you choose a murderer at the beginning and you secretly put it into an envelope, and you know in that game that there is a definite murderer, is definitely a right and wrong as to who is and who isn't the murderer. In this game, it's a little bit more dynamic. Each player is going to get two hunch cards. One is a guilty hunch and the other is an innocent hunch. And so the character that is on the guilty hunch card is the character that you think is the guilty party, that you think committed this murder, and the innocent hunch is someone that you think is innocent. And so the game is sort of based upon you trying to build a case against that character that you think is guilty. And so you're going to be trying to place a guilty evidence on that suspect for the entire game. And for the one who's innocent, you're going to try to make sure that that person ends up being innocent at the end of the game. Because what ends up happening is at the very end, once the game's over with, whichever suspect has the most guilt, or the most guilty evidence piled up against them, is the guilty party. So it's like whoever you build the best case against, that person is guilty. And so it's sort of this dynamic thing. And so that's one of the things that you're working towards. And if you get your guilty hunch right, you're going to get lots of victory points. And if you get your innocent hunch right, you'll get a few victory points as well. So that's one of the ways that you get victory points during the game. Now, one last thing that you're going to get during the setup phase is your starting plot card. And this is a very interesting mechanic in the game, which I've heard called before kind of a choose-your-own-adventure mechanic. And the idea is that your character, in addition to trying to investigate this murder and uncover the conspiracy, your character also has other things going on in their life. And each of the five characters in the game have very different stories. And so you're going to start off with the starting plot card, which has a lot of text on it just saying what's happening in your character's life. And then there's the possibility of that plot being resolved positively or negatively. And if it's resolved positively, then, which is at a certain point in the game, then you're going to get another card that's the furtherance of that plot in a positive direction. And then if it ends negatively, you're going to further that plot in a negative direction. And depending on how well you're able to swing things positively or negatively for these plots will determine how many victory points you get at the resolution of that plot. And so it can be anywhere from, you know, positive 15 victory points to negative 3 or 4. I mean, it kind of swings wildly. So that's another thing that you're trying to keep balanced. So, you know, the overall idea here is that you're trying to get the most victory points. There's several ways to get victory points, and there's a ton of things that you have to balance. So it's not just a unilateral sort of murder mystery game where you're just trying to solve the murder. That's really only one part of it. You're trying to solve the murder, and you're trying to do all this other stuff to get victory points at the end. So that's the setup of the game. Now let's go over a game turn and give you an idea of how the play of Android works. So at the beginning of your turn, you're going to get a certain amount of time with which to do things on your turn. And the average or a normal amount that you're going to get is 6 time units. And there's lots of things that you can do on your turn. Again, you're trying to balance and juggle all these things to get the most victory points. So one thing, here's the list of things you can do with your time. One is you can move to a new location. That takes 1 time. And that is, like I said before, with the little vehicle marker things, you can, whatever distance your vehicle can travel, you can move to a location that's within that distance for 1 time. If something's a little bit too far away, which we found in our game was kind of frustrating because sometimes you'd only be like a millimeter away from where you needed to go, but it wasn't quite far enough, so you would have to go to an intermediate location and then spend another time to get to where you wanted to go. There's 3 different kinds of locations. There's like a normal location, a ritzy location, and a seedy location. Those are denoted by different shapes on the locations. But when you enter a ritzy location, then you get to draw one of your light cards from your twilight deck. And those are going to be good things that you can do on your turn. And then if you enter a seedy location, then you can draw a dark card from any of your opponent's decks. Again, those are the dark cards or bad cards that you can play on your opponents during their turn. So that's one. So moving is one thing you can do. You can follow up on a lead. So if you happen to go into a location that has one of those lead tokens that I talked to you about before, the document leads or testimony leads or physical evidence leads, then you can pick up that token and you can resolve that lead and follow up on it. And there's that can be resolved in two different ways. One, you can place evidence onto a suspect. So if you have a physical evidence lead, for example, which is represented by a little thumbprint, then you can draw an evidence token from the cup or from the pile, and you're going to look at it. And that evidence token on one side is going to have a number on it, either a positive or a negative number. And so positive, we sort of think of these things in terms of how much guilt does that represent. So if it's a positive number, then that's a guilty piece of evidence. And if it's a negative number, then it's kind of more of a negative guilt or leading towards innocence. So you're going to secretly look at the number that's on the back of that, and then you're going to place it onto one of the suspect cards. Now, the suspect cards are divided up into three areas. And so they have areas for testimony evidence, document evidence, and physical evidence. And so you're going to take and put your evidence token onto the area that corresponds with the lead that you just picked up. And so it's kept face down, so you don't really know, your opponents don't know whether it's a positive or a negative thing. So it ends up being this sort of kind of cat and mouse game of knowing who your suspects are, who's on your hunch cards, who's on your opponent's hunch cards. So resolving evidence and putting evidence onto a suspect is one thing you can do to follow up on a lead. The other thing you can do to follow up on a lead is to help to uncover the conspiracy. So that's going to involve taking one of those puzzle pieces that I was talking to you about and turning one of those over, and then you're going to place it down on the board, linking up the conspiracy in some way. So there's little tracks or pathways on these puzzle pieces, and you just have to place it onto a piece that will create some kind of a link. You can't just place it down where it doesn't link up or continue the pathway. There are three different kinds of puzzle pieces in the game, and on the back of the puzzle piece is a symbol, and there's different benefits that you can get from the those puzzle pieces. So and they're sort of tiered too. So there's like everybody starts off on the lower level puzzle piece, and then there's a higher level and then a third level. So instead of taking the puzzle piece that's on the bottom there, you can choose to dig deeper, which means that on your turn, instead of taking a puzzle piece, you can actually move your little player token that's next to the puzzle pieces, move it up one slot, so that now you're next to the better level of puzzle pieces. So on a following turn, you can grab that puzzle piece in the middle, and that'll give you some better benefits. And I won't go into the details of the benefits, but they're just going to give you some tokens and some other things that'll help you on later in the game. And also, when you turn over those puzzle pieces, on the front side, the part that's going to go down on the puzzle piece board, sometimes you'll get some additional benefits as well. You might be able to move a lead, or you might get an additional puzzle piece. So there's some benefits there to trying to uncover the conspiracy. So those are the two ways that you can follow up on a lead. Regardless of which one that you do, you're then going to pass your lead token to the player on your right. And then that player is going to be able to place it in another location. And it has to go into a location that corresponds with the color of that lead. So it's kind of a neat mechanic because, you'll go to a place where the lead is, and then another player can choose where it's going to go. And there's some rules associated with that. They can't place it too close to where their character is. That would make it a little bit too easy. But it allows those leads to kind of move around the board, and as the players are following this evidence trail to get these suspects. So following up on a lead, whether you're getting a puzzle piece or placing evidence, costs one time. You can also, on your turn, draw or discard a card from your hand, and that will cost one time. You can either draw a light card from your own deck, or you can draw a dark card from an opponent's deck. The hand limit is 6, and so if you get to that limit, you can't draw more cards. but you can choose to spend one time to discard a card of your choice. You can also spend one time to play a light card. The light cards are the cards that do good things, and you can play those on your turn. And let me talk just a second about card play and how that works, because that's kind of a big part of the game. There's sort of a balance in this game between the light cards and the dark cards. On your player card, there's a little track of circles, and that's called your twilight track. And for every character, there's five of them. The left side is kind of a light white, and then as you kind of go over to the right side of the track, it goes to black. And so you're going to start off in the very middle. You have a little token that'll put in the middle of the track. And in addition to spending time when you play a light card, every light card is going to have what's called a shift cost. And so when you play a light card, then you have to do what's called dark shifting. And so that's going to shift your track a certain number of spaces towards the dark side of your track. And so once you get all the way to the dark side of your track, then you can't play any more light cards until you get your track back over to the light side. And so it's sort of this balance here where if you play a bunch of good cards, then you're not going to be able to play those anymore until you play a bad card on your opponent. And so then the shift cost is at the top left of your card. And so this is a very interesting balance mechanic because it just means that you can't really spend this game going around just being a nice guy and only playing good cards on yourself. You really have to play bad cards and confront your opponents in order to be able to do anything, because you're going to kind of get stuck if you can't play any of your light cards. So this shifting mechanic kind of works like that. So you can play a light card, you'll spend one time, and then you'll dark shift the number of spaces that's indicated on the card, then you'll get the benefit of whatever that card is. Consequently, if you happen to play a dark card on your opponent's turn, you don't have to spend any time to do that, because usually the dark cards are in response to something that happens with the other opponent. Maybe they enter a location, or they're about to do something, and you can play that as a... we use the term as an instant of, you know, because Single L was playing with us and he loves to play Magic, so that was the language that he understood. So that's another thing you can do on your turn. Another thing you can do is doing what's called getting a jump on the case. You can spend one time doing that. And what that basically is if you happen to be in the location where the scene of the crime marker is, then you can choose to move the start player token to you. I didn't find this to be a very useful mechanic at all. We never did this at all during the game, but I guess if you wanted to change the order of play, that might be useful. So I might not be thinking about it as deeply as I need to, but we never really used that one. And then another thing that you're going to be able to do on your turn is to use a location's ability. And that isn't necessarily going to cost any time, but there are certain locations on the board that have, I guess you would call it like an equation on it, where you can spend a certain number of resources to get some other kind of resources. And so it might be a combination of time, maybe you have to discard some cards. There's also some things in the game called favors. These are little tokens that you're going to get at different points of the game, and by playing certain cards, there's four kinds of favors. You know, maybe you have to spend a favor and a time and a card, and that will give you some other kind of a benefit. And so you can move around, and you can see where these are on the board, and you're going to sort of trade in these commodities to be able to get the things that you need. And for example, in the Jinteki location, which is one of the places where the androids are made, if you spend a certain number of resources, you can get this thing called a Jinteki token, which is just a token that's worth 3 victory points. That's pretty much it. So you get 3 victory points for getting those resources. So it's an incentive for you to go and try to collect those resources to get that token. So you can use that location ability on your turn. It just sort of depends on what you have to spend on that. It might not necessarily be time. So that's pretty much an overview of how an individual game turn works. And then after everyone has taken their turn, then there's a phase called the end of day phase. And that's when certain events are going to pop up. At the end of certain days, you'll play a general event card. Those do lots of different things. There's a big stack of them. There's also a specific event that happens at the beginning of the seventh turn, which is specific to the murder that you've selected for the game. In addition, there's going to be at the end of the third and the sixth day of each week. I should probably back up and say that the game is 12 total days. And so a day consists of everybody taking their turn and then this end of day phase. So 12 days in the whole game, or what they're called 2 weeks. I guess in the future, a week only has 6 days. So at the end of the third and the sixth day of every week, you're going to do what's called resolving your plot. So I mentioned earlier that you have these sort of choose your own adventure plot cards where you're going to resolve your plot in a good or a bad direction. Now, here's what determines whether it's in a good or bad direction. You have these tokens that are called baggage tokens, and you can have good baggage or you can have bad baggage on your plot. And so you're going to gain these baggage through lots of different things, card play or locations on the map, or a lot of different opportunities to get baggage in the game. You can also even acquire baggage through the use of one of those special locations on the board where you trade resources. So you're going to add good and bad baggage over the course of the first couple of days. When you get to the end of the third day, you're going to resolve your plot. And what's going to happen is it'll be based upon how much good or bad baggage you have. If you have more good than bad, then it goes in the good direction. If you have more bad than good, it goes in the bad direction. If you have a tie, it goes in the bad direction. So bad news if you have a tie there. So then you're just going to issue your second plot card. It's going to have some other instructions. These are all very character-specific cards, so I won't even go into any of the details of the cards, but they're really going to play out the plot of that character and what's going on in their life. So lots of different variety in those cards. So you're going to do that at the end of the third and the sixth day. So at the end of the sixth day, the plot will completely resolve, and then you'll get a certain number of victory points based upon how well that plot resolved. Then when the next week of the game starts, then you'll draw a new starting plot card, and you'll kind of do it all over again. The only exception is the character Raymond. He has one plot that goes through the entire game, and so it's kind of a all or nothing thing for him, if you know, because that plot will get resolved at the very end of the game for either a ton of victory points or a ton of negative victory points. So you're going to do all that for 12 turns, and then you'll be at the end of the game. It'll be time to score. And so the first thing that you're going to do is determine who is the murderer. So you're going to take all those evidence tokens that have been placed on the suspects for the entire game, you're going to turn them all over and do kind of a big tally. Now, one sort of balancing mechanism that happens is that each of the suspects has those three areas where they're... their evidence can be placed, and those are categorized as being either strong, normal, or weak. And they're in different orders for each of the suspects. So maybe for one suspect, the physical evidence is considered strong, but the document evidence is considered weak. So it's different for every suspect. But the way it's going to work is that the lowest value evidence token that's in the subject's strong evidence file gets discarded, and then the highest value evidence token that's in the suspect's weak evidence file will get discarded. So after that's done, then you're going to basically add up all of the guilt amounts, the positives and the negatives. There's some special guilt things that I didn't really quite go over for alibis and surprise witnesses, but that'll give you some different kinds of guilt points there. And then whichever character has the most guilt, they are the murderer. They're considered the guilty one. And so whoever has that on their guilty hunch card will get the victory points for that. And then whoever has the other characters on their innocent card will get the victory points for them. After you've determined who the murderer is, then you're going to go to the conspiracy puzzle board, and you're going to look and see how many links have been made to the outer edge of the board. And the outer edge will... those different locations there will determine different victory point amounts. So you might link to a location that's going to say that, you know, now you get one victory point for every green favor token that you have in your possession. So it's going to sort of give you victory points for those sort of things. So you're going to tally up victory points based upon how that conspiracy map looks at the very end of the game. So then you're going to just tally up all of your points. You're going to get points for your guilty hunches being correct, points for your innocent hunches being correct, your plot cards that you've been trying to resolve throughout the course of the game, you'll get positive or negative victory points for how those resolved. If you have a conspiracy token, conspiracy tokens I didn't mention before, but if you happen to finish a row or a column of puzzle pieces during the game, you're going to get 4 victory points for that. You're going to get points for those Haas and Gentechi tokens that you get on the board. There's some things called trauma counters that you might get. Those are going to be minus one victory points for each of those. And anything that might come out of that conspiracy, if you have some victory points that might get from that. So all of those things added up together is going to give you your final score. And then whoever has the most points is the winner. So it's kind of a strange game, I think, because, it seems like it's a murder mystery game, but it really is a victory point game. And so finding your way to those victory points is sort of your best strategy. But that's an overview. This is, I think, by far one of the more complicated games that I've ever had to teach or play. And so hopefully this 30-minute diatribe will give you an idea of how the game is played. So that's a basic overview of the rules to the mega epic game Android.
Simple, huh?
Oh, you're awake.
Hello.
All right, so now that we've gone over that, we wanted to give you some new footage of our what we're going to call our halftime show. We got together about a week or so ago, and we played this game. We played a three-player game, me, Cody, and our good gaming buddy Single L, whose name is actually Lloyd.
With one L.
With one L. That's why he's called Single L. See, it wasn't such a mystery after
all. See what we did there?
Yeah, see? So me and Cody and Lloyd, we got together and played Android, and I appreciate them being willing to dig into this big rule book, and I sent them all the rules ahead of time. So after we got through about halfway through the game, through the first week of the game, we pulled out the recorder and we decided let's go ahead and give our thoughts right here during the middle of the game and see how we feel about it at this point. So here we proudly bring you our halftime show.
Woo!
Okay, so welcome to the halftime show of the game Android. We've been playing this game for a little over 2 hours now.
Uh-huh.
We've just reached the end of day six, the first week of play. And I'm here with Cody.
Hey!
And for the very first time, the premiere of our good gaming buddy, Single L.
It's a Single L, everybody. You've heard talk of me. Now here I am.
The legend in flesh.
The legend in flesh.
Digital.
Or voice.
He has appeared finally. So we just want to just talk a little bit about the game. We've given you some background on how the game works. And so we're halfway through this game. We're right in the middle of it. And we just want to start off by just giving our initial impressions of the game. So, Cody, let's start with you, man. How are you feeling about the game? What do you think of it so far? What are some positives and negatives at this point in the game?
It's meaty. But I'm not seeing where it's a total just huge time sink like I've heard just on The Geek and through various reviews. I mean, it's like I said, it's a meaty game. It's going to take some time to play. But I think once you get the rules down, and there are a lot, but once you get them down, I think this game plays fairly quickly if you know what you want to do and what goals your character has. We'll see, but so far I like it.
All right, Single L, what are you thinking about this game so far?
You said we're at 2 hours. We're at the 2 hour mark right now.
Right about the 2 hour. I think the second half will probably go
about
faster.
About halfway mark. So I can see where you're saying the game goes a little fast. It's still gonna. I say even if you're playing it fast, it's gonna go about 3 hours with three people.
Yeah, minimum.
Yeah. The big thing that I'm seeing right now is that it's just not really matching up with the plot on the cards. There's supposed to be this overwhelming theme going on with the game, and it doesn't really correspond to what you're doing in the game. It just happens to be these words that you're reading on the cards. You go, oh, okay, so that's what's happening in the world of these people. I would consider it an all right game. I'm not too big on it right now, but it's okay.
Okay. Well, I'm sort of feeling sort of halfway, I think, between Cody and Single L here. I definitely agree that the plots on the cards and this whole sort of rich, overarching plot, doesn't really match up so well with the mechanics and the activities that you're doing on each turn. I'm playing Caprice Nise right now, the psychic clone. And I think
you are.
Yeah, I am. And I think her plot is that she's trying to keep from going crazy, and it looks like she's trying to get a date with this guy named Daniel, I just don't really feel like anything that I'm doing is really forwarding that, but the cards are telling me that the stuff that I'm doing is helping me to get a date with Daniel, so it is kind of difficult to make that connection. Mechanically, though, I really think there's a lot of good things that are going on. And one of the biggest challenges in the game so far, I think, is there's too many things to do. And there's several different ways to get victory points, and it just seems like you're always kind of scrambling. You only get a certain amount of time each turn, and you're trying to maneuver around to get some things done. And I've had a couple of turns where I really don't feel like I got hardly anything done.
So. Or you get stuck up in the moon.
Get stuck up in the moon.
I'm up in the moon!
So, Singalalka got it. He's playing, what is his name? Floyd?
His name is Floyd 2X3A7C.
You know it. And, he starts off up in the moon area of the board. And
never leaves the moon. He can't get away from the moon.
It's been very difficult for him to get away from the moon. So, Cody, got anything more to say before we head on to week two?
This would make a really good role-playing game. And if Fantasy Flight doesn't move in that direction at all, I think they're losing out on some money. Because I'm already like putting plots and systems in my head as I'm playing the board game. I think I'd get more out of it as an RPG setting. But
I agree. And it just seems like that... that would be something that would be real natural for Fantasy Flight to do.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll have to use our connections with Kevin Wilson, and we have no connections.
We played with him once.
Hey, you know? And maybe they can move in that direction. So, but no, I think that would be, I agree, I think that would be really cool. So, all right, well, that's our halftime report for Android, and we'll be back at the end of the game to give you some final thoughts.
I'm going to win.
Doubtful. So that was how we felt about the game after playing through 1 week or six turns of the game, and so the game continued, and we kind of slogged through the rest of it. maybe slog's not the right word.
Yeah.
I don't know. We played through the rest of it, and then when we got to the end, we pulled the recorder out again to give you our final thoughts on the game. So,
including single L's by try or deny.
That's right. Yeah, we don't want to give too much away here.
No.
But we could have our first remote by try or deny.
From the field. Have a listen.
Boo!
What?
Boo.
What?
Shenanigans.
Well, we've reached the end.
Tomfoolery?
Tomfoolery.
Ballyhoo. We've reached the end of our game of Android, and it was a hard-fought battle, but the final score was John, 33 points. Cody, 32 points.
11 team million.
Single L got 11.
Team million.
I didn't have the book.
And Cody is crying foul because he says that I didn't teach the rules right and didn't give him all the rules.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
John kept me on the moon. That's all I got to say.
He was up in the moon. It was a good game. It was a good game.
All right, so now that we finished the game, we're going to go back around again now that we're at the end. We're sitting at about right at about 3 hours for the gameplay.
Not counting rules teaching.
We probably spent... somewhere in the order of 45 minutes,
yeah,
setting up the game and teaching the rules. And so I had read, just to give you some background, I read the rule book pretty extensively, so I taught the rules. Single L, I sent him a copy of the rules, and he read over those pretty good. And
pretty well, John, pretty well.
Pretty. You're just bitter now, so you're starting to correct my grammar.
No. It's the only thing I can win at.
I'll edit that.
I didn't read them at all.
Cody didn't read the rules at all.
So. I just looked at the pictures.
So we're sitting right at about 3 hours, so I thought that was a pretty reasonable amount of time for the kind of game that this was. But anyway, I'll turn it over to Cody first. Go ahead and give me your final thoughts on this game, and we'll save our rating, the buy, try, deny, until we get back in the Game On Studios next week. But if you just go ahead and give me the rundown.
Like I said earlier, it's meaty, but I think once you get a few plays under your belt, and especially if you play with the right people... it's an interesting game. Like I said, there's really no other game like it. It's unique, and like I said, I really dig the storyline. Like, you know, like I said, I would like to see it in a RPG book. But I had to agree with Lloyd as the game went on. Like the plot that they had on the cards, it just seemed real tacked on. It seems like it's a good story if you had everything put together, but individually it just doesn't make a lot of sense, and I think actually kind of detracts from the gameplay a little bit. But I had a good time. John cheated, and I'm undefeated in Android. Woo!
Okay, so Single L, why don't you give us just some of your thoughts?
Following along Cody's line there with the tacked on sort of plot line to it, it's almost, you were saying it'd be a good RPG type game. It's almost like they try to incorporate too much of that into it, and it just didn't make sense with the gameplay that you're trying to do.
That's a good way to look at it.
I kind of saw it as a resource management type game, and for it to go as long as it did, there's not much you can do when it's not your turn, so it makes an off turn, you're just sort of watching what people do. You do get to interact. There's cards that allow you to interact to mess up another player, so that gives a little bit of interest, but there are times where you're just kind of waiting for your turn to come around.
It sort of feels to me like there's about 5 different Euro games going on at once. I know that makes Cody a little bit nervous, but...
Was I tricked?
All these nice colorful pieces, you never knew. But the puzzle for the conspiracy, the collecting of all the different baggage tokens on your plot to help that get forwarded, the collection of all the resources so that you could get the different tokens, like the Jinteki and Haas Bioroid areas, you could get victory points for that. And then also the card play is almost a separate game too, because you have this light shifting and dark shifting so that you can play the good and the bad cards. So it really does feel like it's a whole bunch of Euro mechanics smushed together with this theme laid over top of it, kind of almost a little bit surreptitiously. So I like the game as well. I could sort of feel the last couple of turns like it was just starting to wind down, and you know, just kind of looking around the table, it seemed like we were kind of done with it. I think about 2 turns. You know, before the game was over with.
Yeah.
And I think that one interesting thing is that I think Cody and Single L thought that I was going to win the game by a ton based upon some of the tokens I had. I had a bunch of these Jinteki tokens, and I got some extra victory points for connecting the puzzle together. So it looked just in front of me like I had the advantage. But because of the gameplay of the suspects, it actually ended up being a much closer game. In a way, I think that's almost kind of a downside, because you don't really know where you stand. You're trying your best, but then at the very end, it's just going to kind of come down to how the chips fell, how the evidence tokens fell.
And theme-wise, it felt kind of anticlimactic, because it's like, boy, you know, I won, and the person who I think is guilty, and who may or may not be guilty, that's the one I got, and that's the game.
Yeah.
You know, theme-wise, it's just kind of like, you know,
well, that was one of the things I thought was going to be cool about the game at the beginning, because I kind of like the idea that you can manipulate who was going to be the guilty party. But
oh yeah.
But I mean, now that we've played it, I almost feel like the old style of, you know, like in Clue, where you pick the murderer and stick him in the envelope, and there's an actual murderer that you're finding out at the end, almost seems a little like that would be a little bit more rewarding.
And from reading the rules when I was reading over the theme of it, where it sounds like you get to be a detective, you don't really solve anything within the game. And it kind of sounded like a fun thing at first, like you were saying, that you kind of get to choose who might be the guilty or the innocent. You can kind of tell throughout the playing of the game when more evidence tokens get put on the card who people are trying to get to be innocent or guilty. But like you said, you never know while playing where the tide is turning in that. So you don't really ever feel like you get to decide if you're making a good push at making somebody guilty or innocent.
Well, from my plot cards, I apparently ended up putting an old man in jail, but that had nothing to do with the main game. So.
And my minister died.
That's too bad.
I think I got a date with the guy, and I'm not exactly sure what happened at the end, but suddenly the world seemed filled with possibilities, apparently, at the very end here. So.
Well, here's a possibility. We're going to have Lloyd do a remote Biochar Deny from my game room.
All right, so Single L, we've played through Android, and want to go ahead and get your thoughts here. What is your rating for this game, Android, Buy, Try, or Deny?
It is a try plus for me, using your own system of pluses and minuses. And
a very complicated slide rule-based system.
I've tried to understand it through my many listenings of the show. I am taking notes, and I still need to study. But I would give it a try plus. To buy a game that is this meaty and spending the money on it for this, it's a lot of money to put down on top of a game like this. But I would definitely say, if you're at a friend's house, they invite you over for a game night, I would give it a try. It's good if you're sort of into the resource management type game, and you kind of like the RPG world a little bit of having a storyline, it kind of goes along those playing lines for you, but I would have to stick with a try plus.
Okay, so we heard Lloyd's by try or deny, he gave the game a try plus, and he seemed to enjoy it a good bit. Although I could sort of see on his face that he wasn't really digging it for most of the game.
The one rule mistake.
Oh yeah, where he thought that he had to stay up in the moon.
Up in the moon.
At the Haas Bioroid at the beginning of every turn after the fourth turn, that really did hamstring him. So I mean, when you lose that badly, it's got to affect your opinion of the game. So sorry, Lloyd. So now it's time for us to give our buy, try, or deny. So I'll kick it over to Cody. Cody, Android, buy, try, or deny.
It has to be a try. There is no other answer to this. And I'll tell you why.
Why?
It is a polarizing game, and I really see why. It's a monster of a game. It's a big, thick fella. But I can just see how some people would just love this game. And I, to a point, really, really liked it. But then there are some things that I just did not like about it. I thought it went on too long for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it kind of dragged a bit at times. And like Lloyd mentioned, sometimes the plot didn't really... It didn't permeate the game as much as I thought it should.
Didn't seem to line up with the mechanics.
Just you kind of looked at it like, oh, okay. But it has some really revolutionary game features with the puzzle piece mechanic. You know, I don't know the actual name for it.
We're going to call it the puzzle piece mechanic.
We're going to call it the puzzle piece mechanic because I'm an innovator like that. And the plot points, which we call it, you know, the choose your own adventure cards. And it really has some unique elements. And I think if you could get a group that would play this on a regular enough basis, you could really see some of the inner workings really shine, because I think this game is pretty deep and it's got some value to it. But that said, it is not for everyone. This is something you definitely want to give a try, unless John's review stirred your soul enough to where you want to go out, or John's review of the rules, because his normal review would not stir you. But
hey,
but I love you. But definitely sit down, give this one a try if you think you might like it. This is one where I wouldn't advise an impulse purchase. This is one I think you need to know, or it will gather dust on your shelf. It's a good game. It's got some quirkiness to it, but in the end, I think it is a solid try. And one other addition I want to throw in there is that, and I mentioned this during the field review, as it were, this, just the setting and the plot, from what I gathered, would be such a good role-playing game supplement book. I know I don't want to be that guy, I keep harping on the RPG side of it.
No,
but
I think you made a really good point with that. I think it's true.
But just seeing what they had done with it and how much work went into just to that, I would not be surprised. A Fantasy Flight game has they've dipped their toe in the RPG pool before. I'd like to see him come out with some sort of just setting book for Android, or maybe not even its own system, just a kind of a standalone thing, because it is excellent. It is polished, and from what I've just read on my card and the other cards and looking at the board, it would make a great setting. So it gets bonus points for me there, but definitely give it a try. Now, John, Android by Kevin Wilson and his Fantasy Flight Games band, buy, try, or deny?
It's definitely going to be a try for me as well.
Told you.
And I think it's for a lot of the same reasons that both Single L and Cody have mentioned. I really agreed with Lloyd about the point of the mechanics not really lining up with the theme. It just didn't seem to me like it, like what I was doing made a whole lot of sense with the plot. But I'll give it a definite try. It's if you like Fantasy Flight games in general and the big heavily themed games that they put out, I think you're going to at least think it's pretty cool, you know, for the components and
it's
the rule
sexy.
Book and the story and that kind of stuff. But I just can't see myself. We talked about it at the after we turned the mic off at Cody's place, that I'm just not sure if I could see this getting to the table very many more times, just because of the time investment it takes and the fact that you almost need a few plays to be able to know how to play certain characters. All five of the characters in the game play so differently that you kind of have to have some background knowledge. I thought it was really interesting that they had to include tip sheets in the game that will tell you how to play your character. And it almost looks, because they're on some very thin paper, like that might have been an afterthought. You know, like they got the game already and they said, man, no one's going to be able to know how to play these unless we give them some pointers.
All right.
So that's a little bit of a slight red flag for me. But you know, it's an extremely well done, obviously a labor of love for Kevin Wilson, and very well done. I mean, if you have a chance to pick it up and you can read his comments in the back of the rule book where he talks about how, you know, kind of his childhood growing up reading science fiction novels and that kind of stuff, it's really an interesting look into Kevin's life, and you can definitely see that came out in his design of the game. But a try for me, looks like it's a trifecta.
Oh, for us.
Oh, come on, I was waiting to use that one.
Oh, wow.
That's a try from me, it's a try from Cody.
But we definitely have to play it again.
Yeah, okay, we'll get it out again, and
absolutely.
Maybe we'll do the game on Redux, and
it's still going to be a try, but I want to play it again.
Okay.
Because you cheated.
Okay.
Well, what do you say we close out the show, cheater?
Yeah, sounds good. Well, thanks so much for listening to this episode of Game On with Cody and John. We'd like to invite you to visit our website at www.gameonpodcast.com, and there you'll find all of our previous episodes and this one as well. You'll also find our donation button and a link to our guild on BoardGameGeek.com. It's guild number 576. We'd love for you to join and to get involved in the conversations and postings that are going on there.
And as always, the best way to reach us is through the Game On Inbox, and that's at gameoninbox@gmail.com. Especially, shoot us an email if you plan to attend HoosierCon. We'll have all the links you need in the show notes, and if you want to be like Alan Stucker and his brood of girls, then by all means...
His brood of girls?
Four is a brood.
Okay.
But if you want to come down and play some games with us, or just say hey, we want to see you, so shoot us an email.
All right, well, join us in 2 weeks when we'll have another episode of Game On with Cody and John, episode 12.
Wow.
And
my lucky number.
Nice dozen there. And we'll have a lot of great content for you. We really appreciate you listening. And until next time,
Game On!